The security post from Anil Madhavapati, posted at anil.recoil.org, is titled "Just the Rumor of a Bug is Enough to Find an Exploit These Days," and it's worth reading in full. The core observation is that the attack surface discovery process has changed. Historically, the life cycle was vulnerability discovered, CVE issued, patch released, attackers reverse engineer the patch, exploit appears. That cycle took weeks to months. What's happening now is that even a vague public mention that a bug might exist in a component is enough for automated scanning and exploit generation pipelines to start probing for it.
The business implication is severe. Security patching has always been a race between defenders deploying patches and attackers developing exploits. The assumption has been that defenders have a meaningful head start between the CVE drop and exploitation in the wild. If that head start compresses to hours or disappears entirely when even pre-CVE rumors trigger exploitation, the entire patch management doctrine needs revision. Many organizations operate on monthly patch cycles, which was already inadequate for critical vulnerabilities. This makes it look positively geological.
The mechanism driving this is the combination of LLM, assisted exploit development, and automated scanning infrastructure. You don't need a skilled human researcher to sit down and manually work through a rumored vulnerability anymore. You can describe the rough attack surface to an LLM, generate candidate exploit patterns, and run them at scale across the internet in parallel. The human is still in the loop for the more novel and complex cases, but the low-hanging fruit gets automated.
And there's a dark economics to this. The cost of running that kind of operation has dropped dramatically with cheap compute and open-weight models that aren't subject to the safety constraints of commercial APIs. The barrier to entry for moderately sophisticated attacks is lower than it has been at any point in the history of the internet.
The HN comments on this one were 113 comments of genuine quality. Not just this is scary, but actual practitioners discussing what this means for responsible disclosure, for bug bounty programs, and for the relationship between security researchers and vendors. One thread got into the tension between coordinated disclosure, where you give vendors time to patch before going public, and the current reality where even the act of private communication about a vulnerability might be enough to create a signal that attackers can detect.
On a related infrastructure note, the Monzo stand-in story is a good counterpoint. This is Monzo's engineering blog post about how they've built a system to tolerate complete cloud outages. They are a UK digital bank, and the regulatory expectation for financial institutions is extremely high availability. Their approach, stand-in, essentially pre-computes enough state on a separate infrastructure layer that core banking functions can continue working even if the primary cloud provider is completely unavailable.
The technical architecture here is interesting because it forces clarity about what essential operations actually are. Monzo had to define precisely which customer actions must work during an outage and which can be gracefully degraded. Card payments work. Complex account queries might not. That kind of triage decision is as much product and regulatory work as engineering work.
The US sanctions against the ORI collective generated 605 comments, the most comment volume of any story this week, and that number alone tells you something about the sensitivity of the topic. The ORI collective at Inventati.org appears to be a European-based collective operating some kind of AI infrastructure or research that the US government has decided to sanction. The details are murky in the HN post, and that murkiness is part of what's driving the discussion.
This is a genuinely difficult story to cover precisely because the public information is incomplete. What the HN community is grappling with is the precedent question. Can the US government sanction foreign entities for operating AI infrastructure that it considers dual use or potentially hostile? The answer legally appears to be yes, under existing OFAC authority. Whether doing so is wise policy is a different question.
The 605 comments suggest that the developer community has a strong reaction to the idea of sanctions being applied to what appears to be an independent technology collective rather than a state actor or clearly defined criminal organization. The concern about overreach is real, and the concern about chilling effects on open research infrastructure is real. I'd want more factual clarity before drawing strong conclusions, but the community concern is itself a signal worth noting.
The HTMX 4.0 release is a much less fraught story, but one that matters for the web development ecosystem. HTMX is the library that lets you add dynamic behavior to HTML pages by adding attributes directly in the markup without writing JavaScript. The philosophy is that most web applications don't need a full JavaScript framework. You can get a lot done with server-rendered HTML and targeted, incremental updates.
Version 4.0 is a significant enough release to get 680 points and 170 comments on HN, which for a library release is strong engagement. The web development community has been in a long cycle of framework fatigue, React, then the meta frameworks on top of React, then the various alternatives, and there's a real constituency of developers who want something simpler.
The 12-factor app story appearing on HN the same week is probably not a coincidence in terms of community interest. The 2025 update to that methodology got 274 points and 152 comments. The 12-factor app guidelines were originally published by Adam Wiggins at Heroku in 2011, and they've been a touchstone for building maintainable, scalable web services. The 2025 revision brings them into the current landscape, addressing containerization, managed services, and the changed developer tooling environment.
What's interesting about both HTMX 4.0 and the 12-factor refresh appearing in the same week is that they represent different ends of the same underlying question. What does good software architecture actually look like when you strip away the hype cycles? The answer keeps circling back to simplicity, clear separations of concern, and avoiding complexity that doesn't serve users directly.
The keyboard-driven GUI story has been the most common Twitch pure opinion piece this week, 838 points and 422 comments. The author's argument is that graphical interfaces should be fully operable via keyboard, and that the current state of most GUI applications represents a regression from older interfaces where power users could do everything without reaching for a mouse.
The HN debate on this one is predictably spirited. There are accessibility arguments. Keyboard navigation is essential for users with certain motor disabilities. There are power user arguments. Roman 6-style key bindings are faster once internalized. And there are counterarguments about discoverability and cognitive load for new users. The 422 comments suggest there's no easy resolution, but the discussion is substantive.
The Qmender Linux project is a lighter note in this space. It's a Linux distribution that presents a Windows 7-style desktop, which sounds like nostalgia engineering, but the 33 comments suggest there's genuine interest in the philosophy. A familiar visual metaphor, predictable window management, less visual complexity than modern desktop environments.
The migrating to HTTPX2 story from the OpenAI Python library repo is more technically specific but worth noting. OpenAI's Python client is migrating from the HTTPX library to a newer HTTP/2 native client, and the migration guide is generating discussion about API client design, HTTP/2 adoption, and backwards compatibility. 197 points and 89 comments for what is essentially a library migration guide speaks to how carefully developers watch the tooling they depend on.
The Verschlimmbesserung post deserves a mention just for the concept. It's a German compound word that translates roughly to an improvement that makes things worse. The author applied it to software updates, the pattern where a new version of something introduces features or changes that actively degrade the experience for existing users. The HN comments are full of specific examples that will be deeply relatable to anyone who has watched a favorite tool get redesigned into uselessness.
I think every developer has a personal list of Verschlimmbesserungen. Mine involves a text editor that shall remain nameless that replaced a perfectly functional settings interface with a JSON file that you have to know exists in order to find. The German language's ability to compress complicated concepts into single compound words is genuinely useful.